And this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas in New York City, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Happy New Year, my friends. Happy, happy New Year. What a wonderful thing. I tell you, to be here with you on the holidays to me is one of the most important things I could be doing. Majid Ali, thank you for those wonderful pass-along thank yous as well. You know, he's the other positive minder on the station here. We all are, you know, we all have positive intention, but it's the way you look at the world. And we're going to talk about that today. But before we do, I want to take a little trip down memory lane with you, because it was only in 1968, and I saw an editorial by Rob Herbert. It's real important. I want to read it to you. It promised, talking about 1968, which is 40 years ago to the day, it promised to be a very good year. But then anything would be better than 1967, with its angry kids burning the flag and the war raging and the American cities going up in flames one after another in 1967. A page one headline in the New York Times said, "World bids adieu to a violent year," 1967, a year of violence. It seemed impossible that 1968, the most incredible year of a most incredible decade, was 40 years ago. That was just keep in mind, 20-cent subway fares 40 years ago. No one had a clue what was about to happen. 1968 was the whirlwind year. If we had to remember one year that changed humanity, that may have been it. It was a presidential election year. The Times reported on January 1st that the GOP leaders believed that Governor Nelson Rockefeller of New York was the only Republican who might defeat Lyndon Johnson. Richard Nixon might give the president a good run, they said, but he would probably lose. Ronald Reagan and the governor of Michigan, George Romney, would lose decisively. The Sound of Music and Thoroughly Modern Millie were hit movies, both starring Julie Andrews, get our where head was, Hello Dolly and Fiddler on the Roof were on Broadway. Ladies' nylons at Gimbel's cost 88 cents a pair, and men's dress shirts were 3 for $14.75. Rock and roll, drugs, long-haired young people who considered themselves hip were ubiquitous. But it was still a pretty innocent time. And that time would change. One of the astonishing things about 1968 was how quickly each shocking consciousness-altering event succeeded, the last leaving no time for people to reorient themselves. The mind-boggling occurrences that happened in 68 seemed to come out of nowhere. Like the Viet Cong, who set off a depth charge beneath the Johnson presidency with the Tet Offensive at the end of January, you know? The Tet Offensive suddenly woke us up. Walter Cronkite learned of the coordinated wave of attacks through South Vietnam by the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese regulars, and he reported on the air. He said, "What the hell is going on? I thought we were winning the war." The nation shuddered. The U.S. had never lost a war, but now men padding around in black pajamas and flip-flops fashioned from discarded tires gave every appearance of battling the mightiest military on earth to a stalemate. It was 1968. The New Hampshire primary was March 12th. Eugene McCarthy, remember him? A quiet, cerebral, somewhat flaky senator from Minnesota who was calling for a negotiated settlement of the war. He electrified the country and exposed the president's political vulnerability by finishing second with 42% of the vote. Then within days, Bobby Kennedy, who had only recently said he could see no circumstances in which he would challenge Johnson, was challenging him. McCarthy was furious at Bobby Kennedy. Johnson was traumatized that Bobby Kennedy was running. By the end of the month, Johnson gave up. Euphoria reigned among young people and those opposed to the war and those who believed that ordinary people of goodwill could change the world. For many, it was the peak moment of the 60s. It lasted 4 days. Because on April 3rd, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed in Memphis. Violence erupted in dozens of cities, and especially in Washington, where a number of people were killed, and the fires were the worst in the city had ever had in history since the British took the torch to it in 1814. John Lindsay of Newsweek magazine said, "When Bobby Kennedy was told that King had died, he put his hands to his face. Bobby Kennedy said, 'Oh God, when is this violence going to stop?'" Kennedy himself was murdered 2 months later. I remember people not knowing what to say. The madness had been unleashed, and there seemed to be no way to rein it in. There was so much more to come. More war, the orgy of police violence at the Democratic Convention in Chicago, the razor-thin election of Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew against Hubert Humphrey and Edmund Muskie in November. But an awful lot of people tuned out after Kennedy was killed. That seemed to be when, for so many, the hope finally died. The nation had never recovered from the bullet that killed RFK. Arthur Schlesinger, in his biography of Kennedy, quotes Richard Hotwood of the Washington Post, who said, "We discovered in 1968 this deep, almost mystical bond that existed between Robert Kennedy and the other America. It was a disquieting experience for reporters. We were forced to recognize in Watts and Gary and Shuni Rock that the real estate in the American political process involved not the fate of speechwriters and fundraisers, but the lives of millions of people seeking hope out of despair. And now the hope is dead." 1968, 40 years ago to the day. It was a tough time, and we've come through tough times, my friends. And here we are facing another one. I mean, would we say that this last year was anything different? Well, here we are. Here we are, and we live with a life of possibility of regrets. And we wonder about these regrets. You know, do we look back and say, if only Robert Kennedy had lived, if only Martin Luther King had lived, not gotten killed, if only JFK was around, if only I didn't get that divorce, if only I hadn't married, if only I hadn't gone to school. All these regrets. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Possible Mind. Regrets are a very interesting thing, because when you consider a positive mind, how do you turn regrets into a positive mind? Well, a group of psychologists, as we always have a group of psychologists, I think they should be called a gaggle. You know, gaggle shouldn't be kept for just geese. A gaggle of psychologists, no? A plenary of psychologists? A pod of psychologists. I like that. A pod of psychologists got together, and they decided to study whether regrets are good or bad. Meaning that if there's a person who has a lot of regrets, do they live an unhappier life than the person who has no regrets? And here's what they found out. Guess, what do you think? You think it's good? You think you should have no regrets? Sounds pretty good, right? Well, not true. The psychologists have a thing called, get this, the LPS, because we like to make things up. LPS, you know, it's called a lost possible self. Yes, write that down. It's a new thing, the lost possible self. The lost possible self is when you think about your past and you say, if only I had, then I would have. Like, I think, you know, when I was going to the dentist the other day, I thought, if only I had flossed, I probably wouldn't be sitting in this dentist chair. If only I had, if only. What are your if onlys? What's blunt for you? What do you need? Or what do you think about your onlys? Well, here's what they found. They studied mental well-being, and they studied regrets, and they have regrets going into one of the categories of depression. One of the descriptions of one of the categories of depression is extreme regrets. Over and over again, obsessional regrets. Oh, I should have bought Apple when it was 10 cents a share. You know, I should have bought IBM. I should have never sold my house. All right. Now, of course, you're going to think, positive mind. I know what you do. You forget about it. The past is the past. The present is a gift. That's why they call it the present. All right? And the future's, I don't know, not here yet. So, but that's not the way it works. Nope, my friends, nope. The common wisdom about regret, that what hurts the most is not what you did, but what you didn't do, also appears to be true in some part. You see, if you have regrets, and those regrets cripple you, and you dwell in them, and those make you stand immobile, then you are depressed. If you have regrets, and you discard them quickly, and you immediately say, I have no regrets, they were all opportunities. Well, it may be true, but something happens. You lose a sense of maturity by not attending to your regrets. There is a way of attending to your regrets as an evaluation with the feeling that goes out with it. I mean, think about it. Maybe you got divorced. Or maybe worse, you got divorced upon. Huh? How about divorced upon? That's a new phrase. Not, you know, he divorced me, she divorced me, she left me for somebody else. That's pretty tragic stuff. And that happens to you, and you say, if only I had not had that happen, you know, what would my life be like? And they ruminate about what their life would be like. But what if you looked at it and you said, you know, the reason that happened is, and you take full responsibility for it, because I never paid attention to him. Because I didn't think about the signs. Because I didn't think that sex was important. Or because I didn't think that keeping a relationship alive was because I didn't. And you take full responsibility for it without beating yourself up over the head. You evaluate and you say, here's what could have happened from that one. Oh, well, I learned. There's a man I know who's a fund manager. He manages a hedge fund. Name is Tony, very nice man. He does mostly medical instruments and medical research and stuff like that, which is how I got to know him. And he said, Tony said, I said, Tony, so can you pick a great stock? And he said, no, I can't pick a great stock. He said, I could pick 100 great stocks, and I'm going to be wrong 40% of the time. Maybe 45% of the time, and I'm going to be right 55% of the time. He said, and in this way, I will make money for the fund that I work for. See, Tony knows he's going to be wrong, that no matter what he believes, 45% of the time, it's wrong. So if I ask Tony, I say, Tony, give me a tip on a stock. He says, you want a wrong one or a right one? He doesn't know which is going to be which. You just have to be lucky on that side. But he, because of his picking ability, happens to pick 55% right, which is how he makes a living. You see, he incorporates being wrong as part of his life. That's like us. Could we incorporate being wrong? Of course you do. If you're in the dating game, of course you incorporate being wrong. You go out on a date, you see, you go out with somebody a second time. After you go out a second time, you say, enough of that. You know, I was wrong about wanting to go out the second time. It's okay. So those of us, it says, in a series of studies, a psychologist at the University of Missouri had people write down a description of their future as they imagined it, with that life-altering event not having happened the way it happened. If only I didn't get a divorce, what would your life be like? Think about it. If only. Go ahead, push that thought as far as you want to think. You'll see it's very hard to take that to any kind of a great reality, you know? If only. If only I won $1 million. Seems to make so much sense. You know, you win the lottery. My gosh, there's not a happy lottery winner out there. There's just not. Every study of whoever wins the lottery winds up in some kind of despair. It's a funny thing. A person who doesn't have, who suddenly has a lot, has a tendency to bring themselves back to where they were. They either lose the money, or they do something with the money, and they become bitter and mean and defensive and so on and so forth. So it doesn't necessarily work that way. So what's good and what we can do, and this, my friends, lends itself to today's program, the idea of taking, incorporating, and not ignoring, because the people who ignore, it's all for the best. You know, it reminds me of Candide. In Candide, there's a character called Pangloss. And Pangloss, in this great play, says he's there, and he's, you know, and everything around him is falling to beans, and the city is burning. And he has this expression that he says throughout the entire book. He says, c'est le meilleur du monde possible, which means it's the best of all possible worlds. And he goes around Panglossian, you know, and of course, if you think about the choice of the word, Pangloss is to gloss over everything. Pan means everything, and gloss means, you know, to just keep a shine on it. So Pangloss in Candide says, was that Voltaire? And Candide says, you know, c'est le meilleur du monde possible. Now, how many people do you know who are walking around with a positive mind? Positive mind doesn't mean you got a good head. You could just be somebody who's flaky, who refuses to ever face reality. Then on the other hand, you could be a depressive who pushes reality on everybody and tells everybody who's dancing and singing what's the matter with you. Don't you see you're a victim of this Hallmark-created holiday? What could you say bad about New Year's Day? What could you say about the first of the year? Can we say, no, it's not really the first of the year because the Chinese have it at the first in some other year, and the Israelis have it as another, you know, that the first is not the first? That we shouldn't celebrate the 1st of January? That 1-1 means nothing? Of course it means something. Of course it does. Significant. We're here with significance. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I want to take your calls today. I want to hear from you about how you've taken your regrets, incorporated them into your wisdom. You know, how do you take your regrets and incorporate them into your wisdom? Before we do, I'm going to give you just a short lyric to a poem that's going to turn into music, which you're going to hear in 10 minutes. Yo. We was talking earlier, and I was telling you, talking about life. I feel like life is like braided hair. It's sort of like twist, you know, about braided hair like twist. Three strands twist together. Ultimately, you get to where you're gonna get from the same dirt from the heels of our ancestors. The naked rolls in the fields where the pain was festered, and I wonder where the hold comes from. In the depths of my heart makes me yearn for the drum. It's the same place where the cross is burned. It's the place where the hair is braided. That song is going to be coming to you in a little bit. But first, we're going to take some calls. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Happy New Year to any of you listening out there. Any of my new friends, good friends, old friends, people all over the world, Schenectady, Australia, New Zealand, where else have we heard from? Paris, south of France, we heard from Italy, Spain, Afghanistan, for sure. Quite a few places where people depend on WBAI to be their guiding light. So we've got some help with us in the studio, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Hello, yes. Yes, that's me. Hello, Florence. Happy New Year to you.
And the same to you. I am a faithful listener of yours, and I gleaned so much from your program. Speaking about regrets, I have been in the process, I guess the last 9 years since I retired, of having worked the job for almost 40 years, and I hated the job. I mean, I absolutely hated it. The perks were great, but I'm an artist, and it's taken me over 40 years to simply...
Whoops, are you still there?
After I left the job, I went through the whole thing where I didn't know where I was, who I was, etc. And then I started to get into needlework. And I found out that I absolutely loved it.
You love needlework.
I absolutely love it.
Okay, so now how can you make me a connection between your work and leaving your work and needlework?
Because I was a technical illustrator, which meant that I had to suppress most of my creativity and creative abilities to an exact science almost, to reproduce artwork to scale. And this is not my personality. Basically, I'm a slob. I go off the charts when it comes to doing things. And I did this, and I did it because the money was good. I was a single parent raising a child, et cetera. And the overtime, the freelance, everything was there. So the money was very good.
So, Florence, let me ask you, how are you feeling today?
I feel terrific.
And what makes you be listening to WBAI today of all days?
Because normally I listen to WBAI. It's one of the things that got me through my job.
Yeah, it is
one
of the things,
isn't it? Because I listen to the radio, and I listen to WBAI every single day.
Well, I thank you for your listening, and I thank you for your lesson today, because I think you are teaching us a great deal. And nice to hear from you.
No, it's great talking to you.
Okay, so we'll take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Thank you, Florence. Happy New Year to you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm calling because I was reflecting about personality types that you describe that always says the extreme, like, why are you so happy when there's so much problems in the world? Oh, you're so unrealistic. Oh, you're such a naive person. And I was reflecting on that and thinking, I really didn't feel upset about things. And then I started thinking, well, maybe I don't have enough problems in my life to have that kind of personality.
Well, let's back that up a minute. What's your name?
Kay.
Kay, let me ask you. Now, who is it that you say this to yourself or somebody else says it to you?
People would say it to me.
People
why,
say it
why
to
are you this way?
Yeah,
you
now who? Now
more...
watch, Kay, watch this the most.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of your parents is most likely to say this to you the most?
Neither one of them say it.
Neither one of them? Who
no.
would say it?
Just when I meet someone and they say, where you live, I say, in a project. Oh, how many children you got? 4. Oh, are you married? Divorced? Why are you happy? I can't believe it.
So people can't understand why you're happy?
Yeah. And I started just keeping quiet because it seemed like I had a positive attitude on life, made them angry.
Huh.
You know, and I wasn't patting myself on the shoulders about my children's accomplishments.
Well, you know, there may be an answer to this, okay, so let me maybe help you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's mostly, are you talking about men that you're dating who say this to you?
Men and women, young and old. It's,
you know,
it's just
a lot of people want to, they only feel comfortable when they're taking care of someone.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of enjoy someone who needs help.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come out there, Kay, and you say, listen, I'm handling life and I'm okay, it kind of takes away one of the things that they need, that they live on trying to advise people and take care of people. So my suggestion to you is that you're running into a group of people who normally would like to be taking care of someone.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. You might have to shift your field. You might have to shift on to some other people who don't necessarily need you to be sick for them to be your friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I mean, if you came and spoke to me, I wouldn't say, why are you happy?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, welcome. You know,
well,
what I mean?
Where can I find this group? Just continue being the way I am for the new year and
you know,
you'll
I'll
find
you,
me?
I'll tell you something, Kate. You just said something very powerful about continue being who you are and they'll find you. You are a beacon. You are a beacon, but there's a part of you that tends to take care of sick people.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that true?
Well, I take care of children, and I love babies. And
yeah, there's a part of you that tends to attract people because you would wind up becoming everybody's mother in
mm-hmm.
one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So what you've got to do is lay back taking care of people as much.
Yeah, you know what? You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah,
because for this year, all my children, like I have a million of them, but it seems like it, they all have apartments, and they wanted me to spend the new year in their house. And you know what I told them? All of you go home. I got a house. I could stay right here and bring the new year by myself.
Hey, Kay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kay. Good for you. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Kay. Thanks for calling in. And call us up anytime.
All right, thank you.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille. Wow. Wow, our second stanza for you. So, we've all got things that are hanging about, things that make us cool, things that make us whack, things that make us mad, things we wish we never had done, but they're just the things that make us real. The road twists, and it helps braid our hair, until we all get there. And this is part of the stanza of the what I'm going to be playing you as my New Year song today, because I had to pick a special piece of music for you. Now, although this music that I'll be playing for you has a lot of lyrics to it, it sounds a little like rap music, so you may not be able to catch all the words. And if you don't catch the words, it doesn't matter. You can just stand up and dance, because it's also good for you to keep yourself motioning. I like that. Keeping yourself in motion, moving, getting yourself around, because, you know, it's a thing today. Today's a real good day to move around, and you kind of rev up the engine that way. You get it all going. It's the beginning of the year, not a year to just sit around, a year to kind of vroom, get the engine going, vroom, start the motor, vroom, get yourself going, get it going, because in, you know, even if you're on your own, just oil all the gears, clean out the debris, get ready. Because this year is going to be one hell of a year. And we're going to need as many of the warriors in the best possible shape as we can get our hands on. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial in New York City. Here is my music for you today. Here is my music for you.
I don't know some mysteries. Ancient things and beginnings. Excited about the day when I don't have to hear all the theories. My scalp needs some grease in the same place where the cross is burned. The same place where the loss was earned. The only way we all can learn is if we have these brains with the twist and turn. So we all got things that hang on the back. Things that make us cool, things that make us whack, things that make us mad. Things we wish we never had done. But they're just the things that make us real. Not the master guide where we go from here. The road twists and braids like hair until we all get there.
Walking in the race of life, looking for my own pace. Not always wanting to, but I have to. Sometimes feeling like I've bitten off much more than I can chew. But the wind goes through my hair and lifts me up with ease. Not a crease, hair full of grease, no weave. Embracing me, it's you I see. I am you and you are me, I see, yeah.
Well, that's quite something, don't you think, my friends? Giant Leap. And that's from the Global Soul album from Putumayo. So Global Soul, a hell of a thing. Ooh, terrific music. I was listening to this with a friend of mine yesterday. And little by little, every piece of it, I wish you could hear it more. It just kind of unfolds, you know, and kind of grand. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille talking with you with the Positive Mind. We have a couple of things we're looking at for the new year. You know, I mean, I want you to know the ultimate secret from, you know, the secrets, the secret of happiness, the secret of success, the secret of, I mean, here's the gimmick of the week, the one of the month, the one of the year is what goes around comes around. Whatever you do, it's going to come back and bite you in the butt. So if you treat people mean, eventually you're going to be treated mean. And if you cheat people, eventually you're going to get cheated. And if you love people, eventually you're going to get loved. If you serve people, however, and you serve them too much, you're going to get slapped in the face. You know what I mean? If you just, you can't earn love by giving. You can get loved by giving. But you can't get someone, you can't earn love, you can't make it happen. What you could do is you could have people value you until they get tired of you, until you get stale. So those of you who are in service of other people, you might pull back a little on the giving this year, you know, and let it not be your trick of the week. Say, you know, maybe I won't give so much. It's very hard for me not to give. You can imagine how many times I see something, and if I have a friend and I say, oh, I'm going to give this to my friend. And my friend says, well, I like it, but I don't want to bring any more stuff in my house. I keep trying to shed everything. So if you're one of those who have a tendency to give like me, hold it back. Hold it back a little. Now, if you're somebody who is stingy, this is a very interesting thing. What advice do you think I'm going to give you? Get more stingy. If you're stingy, that means you're wound up like a nut. and nothing's going to unwind you. If you're a stingy person, there is no way of me saying to you, give to a church, give a little bit, get unstingy. It's just not going to happen. So the only way we're going to break this knot, and I consider a stingy person to be a person like who's like a bunch of rubber bands in a ball. You know, it's just tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter, and it's so tight on the inside that there's only one way to get through it. Become more stingy. Become more stingy. Eventually, the rubber bands are going to break. Eventually, you're going to cry. Because stingy people don't cry. Stingy people are people who are trying to hold back their emotions in the form of holding back what they give to people. So sometimes the only way you get to cry is when you hurt so much, and you isolate yourself so much by being stingy that eventually you break down and you cry, and then you join the world. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille taking your calls. We are taking your calls today on this New Year Day. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Armand. How are you?
Good morning. Who is this?
My name is Bill.
Hello, Bill.
How are you?
Excellent.
I can tell. I've been listening to you throughout the years, and you've always kept me moving. So,
Bill, thank you so much. How long have you been listening to this program?
Long before Grandpa Lewis passed.
Really?
Before that, yeah.
So that was a couple of years ago, and I've been here now 18 years.
Well, I've got BAA. 9 in there then. I got at least 10 to 9. Somewhere
wow, good, there. Good. And you've watched my transition.
Oh, I mean, a beautiful transition at that. But the reason for my call is because you kind of like sort of like answered my question, because I always feel like I'm always the one that's giving love and going out of my way for somebody, but yet still I always seem to get dumped on. Like my last escapade with a female, she pretty much turned out to be of something a little more than expected. And, you know, I really wasn't feeling bad about it. I was thinking about it. But when my son left also, then that's when I'm thinking about both of them now. You know, and it's more so than ever. You know what I mean?
Well, let me ask you something. Are you a man who tends to be very neat?
Very neat?
Neat.
No, not at all.
Okay, not at all neat.
No,
how about
I'm in between. I'm like, I don't, if I see a mess, I'll pick it up. But it has to create itself before I'll pick it up.
So, in other words, you're not going to be somebody who's a great organizer.
No.
And why do you think your son or your child doesn't feel as grateful to you as you imagine he would be for all that you've given?
Well, I really think the boy and the girl is spoiled. You know, I was never really one of those hard parents. I was always like, you can speak your mind, but just watch how you speak it to me. You know, and I just think I my lenient hand led them astray to the world, I guess.
Well, that's an interesting thought, you know. I mean, that would be one consideration. You would say, maybe I wasn't there enough as a guiding force for my children, and they needed a stronger guide. Yeah, I wouldn't say lenient is the opposite of lenient.
I'm a single parent, and I had to work in order to do things, and we've always suffered throughout the 19 years that he was home. And I'm talking about to some degree, not terrifically, but enough to know.
So where is the mother of the children?
Well, she kind of took the drug route, and I took them to court. I took her to court in fourth grade.
All right, so there is nothing. Let me tell you about this formula that we have. You brought up two children who believe that you took away their mother. And they believe it.
Well, they've always told me that they don't believe it was one way or the other. They believe it was both of them.
Yeah, I know they may have said that.
But what they sit with is this. Though.
Yeah, and this is what children sit with. Any child who doesn't have a father, who is a divorced, you know, was brought up by their mother, they secretly believe that mom got rid of dad and that it's mom's fault. So you're kind of in there for the blame one way or another. And no matter what you would try to do, no matter how nice you would be or how lenient you would be, there's got to be a thing that these children go through, and they have to go through their transition. And the transition they're going to go through is going through whatever trouble they get into and coming out the other side, and you're being for there as solidly as you could be. Punitively, no. Leniently, no. But somewhere in the middle. being there like you would be for a good friend.
Well, why do you think that's so with every relationship that I've been in?
Same thing, right? Yeah, I have a feeling you overgive, just like you said at the beginning.
I do.
You know, and your giving is a way of trying to get them to love you. You know? And I think you're lovable, and you don't have to give me anything, Bill. You know? What?
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always like back to the same thing. It's like their mother did the same thing in the beginning. She was gone for days, and then I finally fought for him in court and won. But every relationship prior to that and after that, it's almost as if people treat me as if I'm a fool for being so kind, you know what I mean? And I thought that's what you're supposed to do. Like, for instance, I go, instead of giving the churches the 10% of the tithe, I try to give it to the home.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And it seems like nothing ever works out. It's like every year around this time, something of this nature happens to me.
Yeah, it's just there's a missing piece here. There's a missing piece of consciousness. And I want to protect your innocence in many ways. I want to say, I know it's nothing you're doing deliberately, but it's something you're doing because there is a thing that you believe that your very existence itself would not garner love, would not garner people loving you. I think a very good idea for you would be to be a member of some kind of a group, any kind of a group. You belong to any groups at all?
Yes, I do.
What kind of groups do you belong to?
Well, I kind of like follow Al Sharpton's National Action Network.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but those are action networks. Those are different than groups. I'm looking for people who are men, who sit with each other, who are honest with each other, men and women who tell the truth. I would go for anything. I would go for Al-Anon meetings, AA meetings. I would go for any 12-step meetings.
But I'm not using any drugs right
now. No, you don't have to be, because there's a different kind of addiction you have. You have an addiction to giving. And believe me, it wreaks as much havoc, which is what you're
really
seeing.
All the time.
Give it a shot. See what I'm talking about. Yeah, try a CODA meeting.
Which meeting, sir?
CODA, C-O-D-A, which has to do with, you know, being a codependent.
Oh.
And that's what people, that's what the givers usually are in some way, codependent people. You'll see. It's not a bad thing. It costs you nothing. Go visit, see what it's like.
Well, could you tell me some place, recommend someone place in that you have in mind as far as CODA is concerned?
Just look it up on your computer. Find Manhattan CODA.
Okay.
And see where it takes you.
Well, I thank you so much, and I hope I get to listen to you many more years.
Bill, hope to meet you one day. I want to shake your hand.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille taking the calls on New Year's Day. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Yes.
Yes, I can hear you. Speak up.
One of my regrets, many years ago, I was trying to get an organization to back me with my creative ideas. One of the officers said, hey, we can get you a business loan. And I said, would I be personally responsible? Yes. I said, I'm not interested, and I walked away. I probably could have been handed $100,000. And it would have allowed me to really publish and do things with my ideas.
Well, you know, there's a problem with that. And there's a problem when you think back about, if only I had. For example, you could have only done that, and you could have also chosen to invest your money in the stock market, and even if you had $1,000 back then, it would have turned into $100,000 now if you'd done it wisely. Or you could have become a priest. You could have done any number of things, and what we have is the following. That one regret that I hear you think about over and over again. What's your name, by the way? What is it, Al?
Yeah.
Al. Al, that one regret. Yes, I can understand. Yes. The next time you get offered a business opportunity, maybe you'd see it a little differently. And that was then. You know? So what are you writing now? What would you like to write?
Well, I developed something called, I call it a value-centered thinking. therapy.
Uh-huh.
Which I taught at the new school in the 1970s. And I've worked this into the positive power of negative thinking. I've worked this into why did the Bible intentionally mislead us. I have some very, very exciting ideas.
Well, do you have any outline of it of any kind or any piece of it you could send to me? I'd like to look at it.
Okay.
You know, I mean, send it to me by email, armand@thepositivemind.com. I'd love to look at any of that creative thought. And it's yours. I would love to get it and I'll respond to it in some way for you. Please, please send it on to me, Al.
Thanks.
You know, it's my pleasure. And like you said, you know, yeah, there probably was a mistake back then not taking the money and moving ahead and getting your book done. But then your book would probably include things that you don't know, that you know now. You know what I mean?
Right.
You've gotten a lot wiser. Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Rosalina.
Hello, Selena.
Rosa.
Rosalina.
I spoke to you a long time ago, and I was going crazy with my interaction with my daughter. And now it's like 10 or 20 years later, and I'm doing a lot better.
Well, what was going on?
Combining the last two people that spoke about the addictive caregiver. I'm that person, and I'm going to therapy. And I remember you, I asked you, how could I communicate? And you said, well, maybe it's not that important. Maybe you come and or I don't even remember. In any case, I wanted to let you know how well I am doing, that I can communicate with my daughter better.
Rosalina, I remember. Where were you from? Were you from...
I'm calling from New York City.
No, but where were you from originally?
Colombia.
Colombia, that's what I thought. Yes, I remember. Yes,
I saw you on the air.
Yeah, and things worked out with you and your daughter.
They're in the making, but I'm doing so much better because I set up boundaries. You know, the business of being give more because you want to be loved.
Yep.
That was me and my mother before. And I have learned a lot of not being afraid with all the people that I interact to say what I have to say and take care of my own needs and not to be afraid of not being loved. And I'm doing so much better because I am stronger.
Pretty good there. Pretty good there, Rosalina. Pretty good. We're hearing some awful good stories today. This is Armand DeMille. Thank you for calling in, Rosalina. Nice to hear from you again.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So, hey, stick with me, friends. Yeah. We're not leaving yet. We're going to be taking more of your calls, but... I just want to set a little pulse underneath people who are out there today. A little pulse for you to kind of feel your the love in your heart and the intention of your heart. You know, it's intention is what it's about. It's really what we care about the most. Not so much our what we achieve and what we can get done, but the intention. What is your intention? Remember that thing you would go out on a date for the first time and the father would say to the boyfriend, so what are your intentions? Well, here's my question to all of you, my friends. What are your intentions? Think about it. What is your intention? Is your intention to get somebody to love you? Or is your intention to help the world love each other? Is your intention to stop aggression? Or is your intention to be sure that you're no part of aggression? What is your intention? What is it? rather than a New Year's resolution, how about a New Year's intention? I intend to, this year, make peace with my family. I intend to keep a better sparkle in the eyes of the people who love me. I intend, you know? Not I commit, I intend. By now you should be moving with me. By the way, the CODA, New York, city.org is one way you can search it out, CODANYC.org. They also have a phone number, 212-969-8624. Any of you overgivers want to take a look at yourself? Free groups. Free meetings, nice thing. Whatever your intention is. Love doesn't get bought, you know? All right, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're going to take another call. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Yes.
Darryl McPherson calling from the Bronx. Happy New Year, Habaragani, my brother.
How are you, my friend?
Well, I think that my intention this year is to love myself so that I can better love other people. My thought here is that we have all the power that we need within ourselves. We have all the tools to bring that power out, because there are an abundance of psychological and psychiatric tools.
Well, wait. Try it this way. Try it instead of we, because you know there's this tendency always.
Did I say we? I.
Yeah. How did you know I was going to go there? You've been listening to the show for too long.
See, the challenge here, Armand, is that, let me just ask one quick question.
Sure.
Is anybody doing research on the effect of air pressure on thinking? Because whenever these fronts move through, whenever the air pressure changes more than a couple of milligrams of mercury, my brain operates in a really challenging
way.
Well,
you know, yes. The answer is yes. And I'm going to give you a specific area. Believe it or not, it's called barometric studies. And the one particular area that they found it was in barometric migraines. They found that people with migraine headaches and have very frequently have a reaction to barometric pressure. So they said, well, if a migraine headache has this pressure, what other effect does it have on the hormones and the neurotransmitters of the brain? You are touching on a brand new field that I think with our new neuroscience we'll be able to study a little better and learn about this year. You know, we may learn that, and then we'll learn also how not to kill each other. Between the two, we'll be fine.
I have a way then that we can set up the nonprofit and have people raise funds for the nonprofit by just doing searches using the search engine Good Search and putting our new charity in. Because my thought here is if we spread mental health the way that we spread the need to find out about other people's lives, that we can really change what's going on here and empower people. And I can have more power if I love myself and understand that I have the power to use my energy to help my fellow brother rather than to deny my brother what it is that I think that he may want to deny me.
Well, I certainly understand everything you're saying, and I agree with you completely.
We will be in touch in the new year about Agani, which is today's answer is faith, I believe, and with faith and our cooperation. And everybody get up on Good Search and put WBAI in as your charity for today, and make some money for the station so that we can continue getting this fine and wonderful information.
You're a beautiful man.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure.
Stay blessed.
So listen, my friends, this is a wonderful kickoff to the new year. I want to thank you all. And thank the people at WBAI, all of the people there, because I do believe that it's probably the most important resource that we have, or one of the most important resources, and please do support it whenever you can. And I'm grateful. I am grateful to all of you. My gratitude for having you have me on air and being with me and keeping me in your family and keeping me in your home. I love your ears.